Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take your sources, we dig into them, and basically pull out the essential knowledge to get you up to speed fast.
Yep, that's the plan.
So today, our source stack is the May 2025 issue of PHP Architect Magazine.
A good one. Lots in there.
Yeah, think of this deep dive as your shortcut into, well, the current state of PHP development. You know, its capabilities, the community around it.
All seen through the lens of this specific magazine issue right now.
Exactly. We're going to unpack quite a bit. Everything from PHP's, let's say, interesting reputation.
Uh-huh. You can say that again.
To its cutting-edge performance, which might surprise some people. Plus key dev tools, community stuff.
Yeah.
It's a broad look.
And what's great about using this magazine as the source is how it sort of cuts through the noise. PHP has this long history, right?
Right.
And that comes with baggage. A lot of outdated ideas.
For sure.
This issue really counters that by showing the modern reality. It's not just simple websites anymore. We're talking complex, high-performance stuff, data warehousing.
A really wide range. Okay, so speaking of that baggage, we kind of have to address the elephant in the room first, don't we?
Yeah, probably best.
Jim Secondi's article, PHP is Legacy in 2025, just dives right in. He talks about those criticisms you still hear all the time.
Oh, yeah. Isn't PHP supposed to be bad, or why are you still using PHP?
Exactly. If you work with PHP, you've definitely heard some version of that.
And the article points out the source of that criticism is almost always based on, like, super outdated experience.
Right. People who maybe touched PHP back in 2010, 2012.
Exactly. And the language they used then, it's fundamentally different from PHP today.
It's like judging modern JavaScript based on using, I don't know, jQuery back in the day.
Yeah.
It just doesn't track.
And it's weird how that perception sticks. Second even gives this example. An operating system warning about PHP, but really vaguely.
Oh, I remember reading that.
Yeah.
Compared to how it warned about Python 2.7, right?
Yeah. It explicitly named the Python version, but was just generic about PHP. It's a small thing, but it shows how that PHP's bad idea can just keep going, even when it's not accurate anymore.
So what is the reality? Both Second and Christopher Miller, in bringing OE to the forefront, they argue PHP evolved dramatically.
And largely because it was so widely used, think WordPress, Drupal. That huge demand forced it to get more robust, more serious.
Kind of like JavaScript in a way.
A bit, yeah. And a massive part of that evolution was PHP 5, that move to a full object-oriented class system.
Miller's article really digs into how huge PHP 5 was. It brought in all those OOP features that were standard elsewhere, like in Java or C Sharp.
Right, things like public, private, protected for proper encapsulation.
Abstract classes, interfaces.
Proper constructors, destructors, even magic methods, stuff PHP didn't really have before in a structured way.
And crucially, as the article notes, it did this while still keeping PHP's dynamic flexibility.
Which was key. Mm-hmm. And later versions just kept building on that. PHP 5.4 added traits.
Reusable code blocks, yeah.
5.6 brought generators. Then PHP 7, that was a big one, reworked a whole engine.
Huge performance boost, like 100% faster sometimes.
Easily. Then PHP 8.0 added the JIT compiler for potentially even more speed.
8.1 gave us native enums.
Yeah.
Which is great for cleaner code.
Definitely. And you can't forget the tooling that grew up around it. Second highlights Composer.
Oh, yeah. Calling it arguably the best backend package manager.
Which, I mean, compared to how things were before Composer, night and day for managing dependencies.
Absolutely. So all these changes, they directly hit back at those old criticisms, right?
Yeah.
Like performance and scaling.
Exactly. Second takes on those myths. Myth one, PHP doesn't scale.
And the counter.
He points to Fathom Analytics. They rewrote their app in Laravel, a PHP framework, and it handles millions of requests a second.
Wow.
And the point is, scaling problems are usually about architecture, not the language itself. Any language can be slow if built poorly.
And tools like Laravel give you what you need to build scalable systems.
Right. Then myth two, PHP is slow. Okay, historically. Yeah, PHP often worked by starting a new process for each request. That had overhead.
The old CGI model, basically.
Kinda, but that's changing fast. He mentions PHP 8.0's JIT compiler, great for CPU-heavy stuff. And importantly, PHP 8.1's fibers.
Fibers are a really big deal, aren't they? Enabling asynchronous PHP natively.
Exactly. Cooperative, multitasking, coroutines. It lets you write async code without callback hell.
Which opens the door for libraries like React PHP and AmFaF to get really impressive performance, especially for IO stuff like database calls or APIs.
Definitely. So who's actually guiding all this development now?
The PHP Foundation. Second talks about that too.
Yeah.
Formed in, what, 2022?
Yeah, and it employs engineers, 10 of them, some full-time, just to work on maintaining an evolving PHP core.
And it's got this open governance model, right? With big names involved, like Automatic,
JetBrains, Symfony.
That kind of industry backing says a lot about PHP's health and future.
Totally. So the takeaway from this part of the magazine is clear. If you share those old complaints, PHP today is just different. It's modern, object-oriented, great tooling like Composer, SOM, PHP Stan.
It's nothing like it did 15 years ago.
Not at all.
Which actually leads us perfectly into the next bit. If PHP isn't inherently slow anymore, how are people pushing performance now?
Right. That's what Vinicius Dias explores in Overpowered PHP Servers Using IO Multiplexing. He traces how PHP execution on the web has changed.
Starting way back.
Yeah, like CGI launching a whole new PHP process for every single request. Super inefficient.
Wow.
Or mod PHP, embedding PHP right into Apache. Better, maybe, but it wasted server resources even when serving static files.
So what's standard now?
Usually fast CGI, managed by PHP FPM, working with a web server like Nginx.
Okay.
This keeps PHP processes running persistently, avoids the startup overhead per request. Plus, Nginx itself is asynchronous, handles lots of connections well.
And this setup worked well with PHP's traditional model, right? The shared nothing idea.
Exactly. Each request is independent. That made scaling horizontally pretty easy. Just add more servers running PHP FPM is one reason PHP got so popular.
But even with things like opcache speeding up the code execution.
Right. Opcache caches the compiled bytecode.
The application bootstrap, loading the framework, setting up services, that still happens on every single request.
Yep. And that part can still be a significant bottleneck, especially in complex apps.
Okay. And that's where IO multiplexing comes in. To solve that bottleneck.
Well, it solves a related, often bigger bottleneck, blocking IO.
Explain that.
In the traditional model, if your PHP script needs to, say, read a file or query a database or call an external API,
yeah.
The PHP process just stops. It waits. It blocks until that IO operation finishes.
Okay, I see. And with lots of users, that waiting adds up.
Massively. IO multiplexing or asynchronous IO changes that. The server process can start an IO operation, and then instead of waiting,
it goes off and does something else. Handles another request, maybe?
Exactly. When the IO is done, the process gets notified and picks up where it left off for that original request. One process can juggle thousands of connections this way.
That sounds way more efficient.
Mm.
But how do you actually do that in PHP, given its history?
Dias covers a couple of main approaches. One is using low-level event-driven libraries like React PHP to build self-contained servers.
Okay, React PHP gives you the event loop to manage the async stuff.
Right, but the catch is you often need to use a whole different set of libraries built specifically for non-blocking IO. He mentions Framework X as an example built on React PHP. Your existing synchronous code might need significant changes.
Gotcha. What's the other approach?
The other one, which is maybe more revolutionary for existing apps, is Swole.
I've heard of Swole. It's a PHP extension, right? Written in C.
Yes. And here's the key difference Dias highlights. Swole uses hooks to actually change the behavior of standard blocking PHP functions.
Whoa, really? Like what functions?
Things like PDO for databases, stream functions for files, even CURL for HTTP requests. When you run your code inside a Swole server, it can make these functions behave non-blockingly, asynchronously.
So wait, does that mean you could potentially run existing code? Maybe using Doctrine or Symfony or Laravel?
Asynchronously, with fewer changes than if you went pure event loop with something like React PHP. Yes, potentially. That's the big appeal.
That's huge.
It is. And Swole also provides its own high-performance HTTP server.
And this Swole technology, it's kind of the engine behind some of these newer PHP runtimes.
Yeah.
Like Roadrunner, OpenSwole.
Exactly. And FrankenPHP, which Second also mentioned, they leverage these async capabilities.
And frameworks are adapting too.
Yep. Laravel has Octane, which lets you run on Swole or Roadrunner. Symfony has its runtime component, making apps runnable on FPM, Swole, React PHP.
Flexible.
Very. And there are even frameworks like HyperF built specifically for Swole, really focusing on async patterns for things like microservices, gRPC, circuit breakers.
Okay, so the big takeaway from Dias' article, PHP's simple shared nothing model is great for ease of use and scaling, but for top-tier performance, especially with lots of I.O.,
You need to look at these asynchronous models. They offer massive power, but they also bring back some complexity. You have to think about state management differently in a long-running process compared to the old request response cycle.
Right. It's a trade-off. Performance versus complexity. You need to understand that to really leverage these tools.
Absolutely. Okay, so shifting from raw execution speed to making code actually manageable over time. Chris Tankersley's article, Maintaining an Application.
Ah, yes. The joys of maintenance.
He hits on those common pain points, right? Looking at code someone else wrote, or even you, years ago, and it just looks alien.
Or that tribal knowledge, where only one person knows how something works.
Exactly. Or the code is just brittle, and you're afraid to touch it. We've all been there.
So what does he suggest? He talks about value streams.
Yeah, using frameworks like the Flow framework to get visibility into your actual development process. Tracking metrics. Flow velocity, flow time, flow load, flow efficiency.
What do those actually tell you?
They help you see where the work gets stuck, the bottlenecks. Understand how long things really take. It helps you optimize the process, prioritize better.
So it's not just about speed. It's about a smoother, maybe happier team.
That's a big part of it. Focusing on valuable work, not just fighting fires because the process is broken.
And a huge part of reducing that firefighting is testing.
Absolutely fundamental. The article hammers this home. Tests prove work is done. They prevent regressions when you change things later.
Build confidence for developers making those changes.
And act as living documentation. Good tests show how the code is supposed to be used.
He mentions different types. Unit tests.
Right. Unit tests are granular. Testing small pieces in isolation. Really useful for understanding legacy code. He gives a crone expression example.
And behavioral test, BDD.
Yeah, behavior-driven development, testing from the user's perspective.
Yeah.
Using that given when then format, tools like BeHot, Codeception, these are great living documentation too.
For legacy apps, where do you start?
He suggests maybe starting with functional or behavioral tests can be easier sometimes. Get broader coverage first before diving into unit testing every single old function.
Makes sense. Okay, beyond testing, what about code quality?
Two key things there. Consistent style and enforce safety rules. For style, he talks about PHP CodeSniffer, PHPCS.
Check against standards like PSR12.
Exactly. Having everyone write code that looks the same reduces cognitive load. It creates a shared language, stops pointless debates about brace placement.
We've all had those debates.
Right, and PHPCS can often auto-fix issues with PHKCBF. You integrate it into your CI pipeline, enforce it.
Okay, style is one thing. What about safety? Finding bugs.
That's where static analysis comes in. Tools like PHPStan, they analyze your code without running it.
Looking for what? Type errors? Potential bugs?
Yep. Type issues, potential null pointer errors, security vulnerabilities. PHPStan is especially good for enforcing types. He shows a nice example comparing an untyped function to a typed one and what PHPStan catches.
And using static analysis probably encourages better habits too, right? Like adding type hints, better doc blocks.
Definitely, which improves the code quality overall.
And the final piece of the maintainability puzzle, documentation. Often the part people like least.
Yeah, but it's crucial. He calls it a communication bridge. There's code documentation generated from doc blocks using tools like PHP Documenter, explains the how and why of the code.
That's the technical side. What about for users?
End user documentation. He introduces frameworks like Diataxis, which is interesting. It structures docs based on what the user is trying to do.
How so?
It suggests four types. Tutorials for learning, how-to guides for accomplishing a specific task, reference guides for looking up info, and concept guides for understanding bigger ideas.
Ah, thinking about the user's goal. That makes sense. Less like writing a manual, more like helping someone achieve something.
Exactly. So you put all that together, better process visibility, solid testing, enforced code quality and style, thoughtful documentation, and you can make applications much more maintainable.
Even complex or older ones.
Yeah. And speaking of making things easier, the magazine also covers how modern PHP features can automate some of this. Oscar Merida's article, Better Reflection with Better Reflection.
Okay, reflection. That's PHP's ability to look at its own code at runtime.
Right. But the built-in reflection API can be a bit clunky to use sometimes.
So what's Better Reflection?
It's a library, a userland wrapper around the native API, but it adds some really powerful features.
Like what?
A key one is discovering classes and parsing things like PHP 8 attributes without needing to autoload the class or execute any code.
Why is that important?
It lets you build tools that scan and analyze your code base much more safely and efficiently at runtime. You're not accidentally triggering code execution just by inspecting it.
Okay, cool. How does that help automate things? A few examples.
Yeah, really good ones. Like, think about dependency injection containers. Usually you have to manually register all your services.
Right, pages and pages of configuration sometimes.
Exactly. He shows how better reflection can automatically find classes, maybe based on them being in a certain namespace or implementing an interface.
Using methods like getter classes he mentioned?
Yep, and then it can automatically register those discovered classes with the container. Poof, boilerplate gone.
Nice.
Yeah.
And he mentions adding a doc block to explain the magic.
Yeah, which is good practice. Automation is great, but making it understandable is important too.
What other examples? Routes?
Yeah, configuring routes. Manually listing every single route in one big file gets messy fast.
Tell me about it.
So PHP 8 attributes come to the rescue. You define a simple hashtag route attribute.
Metadata directly on the code.
Exactly. Put the path, HTTP methods, maybe a route name. Right there on your controller method using the attribute.
Cleaner.
Much cleaner. Then he shows building a routes mapper class.
What does that do?
It uses better reflection. It's find controllers method to scan your controller directories. It finds all the methods tagged with that hashtag route attribute.
And automatically registers them with the router.
Exactly. Again, removes a ton of manual repetitive configuration.
And he ties this into making controllers aware of the request object too.
Yeah, often controllers need the current HTTP request. He shows a pattern using an interface, request-aware interface, and maybe an abstract base class.
Okay.
Then the routes mapper, when it registers the route, can also make sure to inject the current request object into the controller if it implements that interface.
So it all ties together nicely.
It does. The whole point is using reflection, attributes, and tools like better reflection to automate the boring stuff, reduce boilerplate, make the code cleaner, less prone to copy-paste errors.
Leading to a more maintainable architecture overall.
Precisely.
Okay. Shifting gears a bit again. The magazine also gets into some more specialized areas, cryptography.
Yeah, Eric Mann's article, An Introduction to Diffie-Hellman Key Exchange. It's the start of a crypto series and pitched as pretty accessible.
Okay, what's the core idea?
He introduces asymmetric crypto public-private keys and the math problem behind Diffie-Hellman, which is the discrete logarithm problem.
Which is?
Basically, it's easy to calculate G raised to the power X modulo P, but really, really hard to find X if you only know G, P, and the result. Easy one way, hard the other.
Got it. And how does Diffie-Hellman use that?
He uses a simple PHP example, Brenda and Carol. They agree on public numbers P and G. Each creates a secret private key. They use their private key and the public numbers to calculate a public key, which they swap.
Okay, the exchange of the public keys.
Right. Then, and this is the clever part, each of them takes the other person's public key, combines it with their own private key using that same math, pal, other public, my private, percent P.
Yeah, I think.
They both independently arrive at the exact same shared secret number without ever revealing their private keys.
Magic math.
Pretty much. Then they can use that shared secret to encrypt messages, maybe with a simple XRR cipher in his example.
It's a neat illustration.
But, and he stresses this very heavily, it's a TOI example, small numbers, not audited, totally insecure for real life. Real DH needs huge numbers, thousands of bits, and other protections like DHE Diffie-Hellman ephemeral.
So what's the real takeaway for developers?
The absolute critical message is never roll your own crypto for production systems, ever.
Use the built-in audited libraries.
Yes. He specifically points to PHP's OpenSSL extension and functions like OpenSelpKeyNew, OpenSelpKeyDerive for doing DHKE or ECDH securely. Use the tools provided. Don't invent it yourself.
Sound advice. Okay, another specialized area, data warehousing.
Right. Edward Barnard's article, Conform Dimension Table, this is part of his ongoing series, focusing on a really fundamental concept in Kimball-style data warehousing.
Conform dimensions.
Yeah.
What's the goal there? Especially for PHP devs, maybe more used to operational databases.
The goal is to combine data from different sources, different parts of the business, maybe into a single consistent view for reporting. So you can drill across different facts using the same dimensions, like time or product.
Consistency is key for reliable reports.
Exactly. He walks through building one using a league registration example, identifying the main data set, figuring out how to handle data that doesn't quite fit the main pattern.
Anomalies, like the national tournaments he mentioned.
Yeah, stuff that crosses boundaries.
Hmm.
Then using SQL CTs, unions, to merge these different views into one final consistent dimension table.
He mentions taking small steps.
Yeah, essential for complex data tasks. Break it down. He also touches on the difference between the back-end data warehouse and user-facing data marts, and even real-world wrinkles like business rules based on emotional significance. But the core idea is that this conformed dimension acts as the backbone. It links your facts together consistently, allowing scalable and reliable reporting in that star schema model.
Got it. So, moving beyond the purely technical, the magazine also covers the human side. Community careers.
Yeah, Scott Keck Warren's article, Passing Knowledge to the Next Generation, it's a strong call for experienced devs to share what they've learned.
Why is that so important?
He talks about the gap. New developers learn theory, but experienced devs have the hard-won practical knowledge, the stuff you learn from late-night deployments, things going wrong.
The scars.
Exactly. Experienced devs bridge that gap through code reviews, pair programming, sharing war stories, failures included.
He has that quote, right? Something like, you know, at least 10% more.
About something than someone earlier.
Yeah.
It's your job to share that 10%. It's a direct challenge to basically everyone listening. If you have some experience, share it.
How does he suggest doing that?
Three paths, mainly. The traditional university path, good exposure, but maybe lacks the practical glue, plus cost barriers.
Okay.
The mentorship path, just helping someone out. Accessible to anyone with a bit of experience, really rewarding.
And the third.
The content path. Writing articles, doing podcasts like this, making videos. Easy entry point now, huge potential reach. He mentions the PHP Architect YouTube channel as an example resource.
Makes sense. Sharing knowledge is key. And finally, conferences.
Yeah, Chris Hartshees reflects on the golden age of PHP conferences.
Yeah.
He basically credits conferences with his whole career path since the early 2000s.
Wow.
He talks about seeing a cycle, big main events, then lots of smaller regional ones popping up, maybe a bit of a dip, then a focus back on the big ones. He even mentions his own True North PHP conference.
What are the benefits he sees in attending?
Learning from really smart people, obviously, but also that informal access, the hallway track where you can just chat with experts, and the rise of developer evangelists who are there specifically to help and teach.
So even if the golden age of tons of regional events is maybe past.
He argues there's still huge value. Go to the big ones like Fate Tech or even just local meetups. It's about connecting with the community, learning, and turning programming from just a job into a real career.
That's a great point. Wow. Okay, so we really did cover a ton just from one issue of PHP Architect.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how much ground it covers. From busting myths about PHP being legacy,
to exploring cutting-edge performance with async and new runtimes,
diving into essential maintenance practices like testing and static analysis,
seeing how modern features like reflection and attributes can automate workflows,
touching on specialized areas like crypto and data warehousing,
and wrapping up with the importance of community, knowledge sharing, and career growth.
It really paints a picture of a vibrant, evolving ecosystem and shows why digging into curated sources like this magazine is so valuable for staying current and getting deeper insights.
It absolutely does. And it definitely leaves you, the listener, with something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Considering how much PHP has changed, this surprising performance potential we're seeing with async techniques, all the powerful tools, this active community. What does that actually mean for how you approach learning PHP, building with PHP, maintaining PHP applications, not just now, but looking ahead?